Let's make this a conversation about trust, if we may. Let's go back to what you said on Question Time on Thursday evening, which clearly dismayed an awful lot of people, because you said there would be no coalition, fine, if you don't get the majority that you need, fine, and people understand that, but no deals. The reality is you will have to do deals in one way or another, won't you? Everybody understands that.
Look, the first thing I want to say, John, is that I am still fighting for the next 3 days for the big issues at stake in this election. And I think there's a huge choice between a country run for the richest and most powerful, if we have a continuation of a Conservative government, or a Labour government that will put working people first. And I think we owe it to the country to continue to lay before them the huge issues that there are about whether we build a recovery that goes beyond the City of London, about whether for our young people in our country we build a better future for them, and whether we rescue our NHS. And so in these final hours, I think it's really, really important to focus on that big choice, and that's where my focus is going to be.
But people are capable of doing two things, aren't they? They're capable of focusing on that big choice, as you say. They're also capable of asking themselves, because they're intelligent people, of asking themselves, what happens if... And you surely have an absolute obligation to tell them what happens or what might happen if, so that when they go to the polls on Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon, they are properly informed.
Well, that's true in one sense, because the Conservative Party have been putting out a falsehood that
we would
have a...
Yeah, but I'm asking you what you think, not what the Conservative Party think.
No, and indeed, and I was going to explain the context to what I said about the Scottish National Party, because the Conservative Party have been putting around a falsehood that we would have a coalition...
No, I dismissed that already, because you've already said you're not going to have a coalition.
And so it's really important to set out why we've said that, because they are a separatist party who want to break up the country.
Yep, and everybody understands that as well.
I have huge disagreements with them. And so the reason that I've been so clear about this, more clear, I think, than any opposition leader has ever been before a general election, is because I'm not going to have a coalition with them.
No,
I'm not
going to
do a deal with
them.
And I think that is a really important thing for the public
to
know.
So you say you're not going to do a deal with them. You end up on Thursday night, Friday morning, with not enough seats to form a government by yourself. Are you actually telling the people of this country that in that case you would say, all right, David Cameron, you take over, I cannot form a government? It is that straightforward and that simple, is it?
Well, I want to put a Labour Queen's speech before the House of Commons, and I want to get a Labour majority for that Queen's speech.
And you will need support to do that. You will need support from the Scottish National Party.
Shall we see what happens on Thursday in the election?
But I'm asking you to trust the electorate. I'm asking you to treat them as though they are intelligent, informed people who need to know, when they cast their votes, precisely what would happen if they cast them in one way and what would happen if they cast them in another way. And they are absolutely surely entitled to know whether you would have some sort of arrangement, let's call it a loose arrangement, with the Scottish National Party that would enable you, for instance, to get your first budget through.
No.
Nothing at all.
No, we're not going to have an arrangement with them. I've been
but
absolutely clear about that.
But you expect them to support you?
Look,
you expect them to support you?
What the Scottish National Party or any other MP elected to the House of Commons does, John, is absolutely a matter for them. But I want to be absolutely clear with you. I want to put forward a Labour Queen's speech. We'll put forward a Labour budget, and it'll be for the House of Commons to decide how it votes. You know how the way the House of Commons works. MPs get to vote and get to decide. And I want a Labour Queen's speech to be passed and a Labour budget to be passed. I couldn't be clearer.
What is a legitimate government?
You'll have to explain the question.
Well, you understand what the question means. A lot of your MPs, some of your MPs at any rate, are saying that if you do not have more seats in the new House of Commons than the Conservative Party, then your government would not be legitimate. Is that true?
You know, John, I'm really not going to start speculating about the election outcome.
It's not a matter of speculation. This is a matter of profound constitutional importance.
No, and if you want to get the constitutionalists on to talk to you about the constitutional position...
But you want to be the Prime Minister? Doesn't give you some constitutional authority?
You said it wasn't speculation, John. It absolutely is speculation. I'm fighting as hard as I can for a Labour majority, for Labour to do as well as in this election as we can, because I want to put working people first in our country. I think there are enormous issues that we face. I look forward to discussing with you and others the election outcome after there is an election outcome. But until there is an election outcome, I think I take an old-fashioned view, John, which is that we should let people vote in the election.
And the point I'm trying to put to you is that they cannot vote with the information they need so long as you continue to duck this very important question about what would happen if you do not get the votes you need to form a government by yourself.
But actually, I answered your question directly, John. You asked me a very direct question, which is, are we going to have an arrangement with the Scottish National Party? And I answered your question.
You won't have any conversations with any of them, and that's it. Full stop. You
what's
nor
your next
any of
question?
Your... Well, let's just be absolutely clear, and then we'll put it to bed. Neither you nor any of your colleagues will have any conversations with anybody from the SNP at any point after the election.
We're not going to negotiate about Queen's Speech. No, we're not going to negotiate with the Scottish National Party.
Well, you're
Party
refining my
speech.
Question a little bit, aren't you?
I don't think I am, John. You're asking me whether we're going to negotiate about our Queen's Speech.
I'm asking if we're going to have any conversations with them.
I'm not planning that, no. We're not going to negotiate about the Queen's Speech. I'm going to put a Labour Queen's Speech before the House of Commons. I'm going to want to put a Labour budget before the House of Commons to tackle tax avoidance, to raise the minimum wage, to have a rescue plan for our National Health Service, to build a future for our young people. You know, you can ask me as many times as you like.
Let's move on. Let's move on. And I said this was about trust. The other reason why people at in that Question Time audience seemed not to trust you on Thursday evening was when they asked you whether you'd borrowed too much in the last government, you said no. Now, you seem to be about the last person standing in this country who believes that to be the case.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because yesterday the George Osborne's permanent secretary of the Treasury, Nicholas McPherson, published an article in which he said that 2008 was a banking crisis, pure and simple. And he reflected my judgment, which is that what's happened in our country was that we had a dramatic crisis in the banks, which led to a high deficit. And the question for the 2015 general election, which is the election I'm fighting, not 2010 or 2005, is how do we get that deficit down in a fair way? The government promised to eliminate the deficit. They failed to do so. They have a plan to double the cuts next year. I don't think that's the right plan. I'm going to cut the deficit every year. I'm going to balance the books. I'm going to do it through a combination of fair tax changes. So we'll reverse David Cameron's millionaire's tax cut because I think that those with the broadest shoulders should bear the greatest burden. It's a different
principle.
Although it
happens to be the case that tax cuts for millionaires, tax rates for millionaires were rather lower under you than they are under the Tories. But there we are.
That's wrong, John.
No, it was 40% until about 4 months before you left office.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm interested in. I'm interested in what tax rates are going to be under the next Labour government. And we're going to put the tax rate up to 50% for those earning over £150,000 a year. And let me explain why. Because when I'm a Labour leader going into this election saying that outside key areas like health and education, spending is going to have to fall, I can't justify a £43,000 tax cut for every millionaire in Britain, which is what David Cameron did. And that goes to the big choice of this election, you see.
But they
will
be judging you.
Do you believe that the way a country succeeds is by putting the richest and most powerful first and hope the wealth trickles down to everybody else? Or do you believe that actually by putting working people first again in our country, that's the way the country prospers?
That's, I think, what we call in the trade a rhetorical question, isn't it?
No, it's the big choice. It's the big choice at this election. It's a clash of two ideas at this election, John. It's not a rhetorical question. It's a clash of two ideas. This is a once in every 5 years choice for the British people about how this country works. Are we going to have wages falling behind bills? Are we going to have young people paying the price of hard
and
times?
To inform
those are the big questions.
And to inform the people who are making those big decisions, it's right that they look back at your record and at your own personal judgment. And when you sit here this morning and say, no, we didn't borrow too much. No, it was all to do with the 2008 crisis. Let me quote you what the OECD said. The United Kingdom entered the financial crisis. Of course there was a financial crisis. Everybody knows that. With one of the biggest structural deficits in the industrial world, this limited the government's room to manoeuvre. Now, is the OECD wrong? Is the Office of Budget Responsibility wrong when they talk about your significant increase in public spending? Only a handful of industrial nations who did that, and so on. And are they all wrong?
Well, you know, on the increase in public spending, I'm proud that we invested in hospitals.
And proud that you had to borrow so much to do.
In hospitals.
The borrowing didn't bother you.
No. What happened, John, was that there was a financial crisis, and the financial crisis drove the deficit upwards. It so happens that before
the deficit was up there before the financial crisis began. You went ahead with that massive spending, and you continue that massive spending even after Northern
Rock. John, you're getting
a
bit aerated. I'm getting worried about you.
I'm getting a bit worried about you. I'm trying to get in a word. That's all. I'm trying to get
in the odd
word.
That's never normally your problem,
well,
John. Actually,
I know. You're very good at preventing me from doing so.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
On the contrary, what I was trying to say to you was that you went ahead with that spending even after Northern Rock collapsed and after Lehman Brothers collapsed. You continued with that borrowing, and the borrowing went up and up and up and up, and you don't seem able to accept that it did.
No, the debt and the deficit, John, before the financial crisis were lower than those we inherited, and that's clear. George Osborne adopted our spending plans 3 weeks before what happened with Northern Rock. But, you know, I'm really more interested in the next 5 years.
Right, let's
how we
that.
Get the deficit down in the next 5 years.
And
how
what are you going to get it down to?
How we do it in a fair way. That's what I care about.
When are you going to get rid of the deficit?
We're going to cut the deficit every year. We're going to have a surplus on the current budget, and we're going to do it as soon as possible in the next Parliament. We're definitely going to do it by the end of the Parliament. We want to do it as soon as possible in the next Parliament. And I think it is right to set these rules. Also, by the way, the net debt will be falling. That's the other part of our fiscal plan. I think it's right to set these rules. It's a framework for a Parliament. We're showing how we're going to do it. As I said earlier in the interview, I believe I'm the first Labour leader you've interviewed, and you've interviewed many, with the greatest of respect, who's going into an election saying spending's going to fall. Outside health and education, key areas, spending's actually going to fall. We're going to make cuts each year until we balance the books.
In that case, why does the IFS, Paul Johnson of the IFS, say literally we would not know what we were voting for? Voters were in the dark over whether there would be up to £18 billion worth of cuts under Labour if the party tried to balance the books by 2017-18, or no cuts if they left it until 2019-20. So the question is, by when will you balance the books? Straightforward question.
Well, look, I just want to be very, very clear with you. We said we will do it within the lifetime of the next Parliament. We'll do it as soon as possible. But the reason why I think it's right to set the framework and not somehow pluck a date out of the air without knowing whether you'll meet it, which is what George Osborne has done throughout this Parliament, is because it depends on three factors. The tax changes that we've announced, the spending cuts that we're going to make, but also, crucially, John, on economic growth and rising living standards. Why did this government promise to eliminate the deficit, make the cuts as they promised, and then spectacularly fail to do it? Because they didn't get the growth, they didn't get the living standards. And those are the three elements of our deficit plan. And I think, by the way, it's a balanced plan. I'll just draw this contrast. There are some parties in selection saying no cuts at all. I'm not saying that. There are other parties, the Conservative Party, UKIP, saying double the cuts next year. I think that would be deeply dangerous for our National Health Service. I think ours is a balanced, sensible plan to get the debt falling and get the books balanced.
And when those people in the Question Time audience, many, many other people, they're hardly alone in that, when they say, look, the guy just doesn't get it because he doesn't understand what happened when his government was in power, what do you say to them? I mean, they're entitled to make that judgment, aren't they?
Everybody's entitled to make their own judgments, John, absolutely.
And it is a matter of judgment on your part. If you don't understand what went wrong the last time, then how can you be expected
you
to get
wrong.
It right this time?
Well, let me tell you what went wrong.
You borrowed too much money. Can I help you out?
It was a failure of bank regulation, John. You've got the Treasury Permanent Secretary, George Osborne's Permanent Secretary, saying precisely this. It was a banking crisis, pure and
from
simple.
From 2000 to 2010, public spending rose by more than 50%. That is, you were already way, way, way over the top. You were already over-borrowed by the time the financial crisis hit.
I think I've dealt with that question already, John. But let me just say, I do think we owe the public a discussion about the future. We owe the public a discussion about how are we going to balance the books in a fair way. And look, there's one other point I'd make to you. This is a party, my party, has gone into this election. Every penny of what we've set out is paid for. That is a huge contrast with our opponents. The Conservative Party is spraying promises around like there's no tomorrow on health, on tax cuts, on housing, on rail fares. No idea how they're getting them. The difference with me, John, my NHS rescue plan, my cut in tuition fees, everything I've set out, everything I do is paid for. The first page of our manifesto, our triple lock of fiscal responsibility.
And is that all carved, as it were, in stone?
Absolutely. Our pledges are carved in stone.
Literally. Do you not look at the response to that stone yesterday and all those pledges on it and think, oh, my God, what have we done?
Not at all, because I think trust is a huge issue in this election. And, you know, the difference with our pledges is that they're not going to expire on May the 8th.
Did you have to carve them in stone? That was a gimmick. You've explained about your pledges, but what I'm trying to suggest to you, because we started this conversation talking about trust, a lot of people will look at that. A lot of people have laughed at it. Of course they have.
But people talking.
Equally, it's certain. Oh, yeah, we can agree on that. Absolutely. I'll give you a few quotes, shall I? The Guardian, the paper that supports you, it's raised the bar of stupidity still higher. It made Neil Kinnock and his Sheffield speech.
They don't always get clever. They don't always get everything right. But let me make this point about the reason for it. This is a serious point. Let me make a serious point. Look, Nick Clegg went into this last election said he'd cut tuition fees, right? He trebled them. David Cameron went into the last election saying no ifs, no buts, net migration into the tens of thousands is 298,000.
Right, so,
we are setting out promises. They don't expire on May the 8th. They don't disappear.
And you need them on an 8-foot slab of stone
absolutely.
Stuck in the Downing Street garden so that you can look out at them every morning and say, oh, that's what
I'll leave the landscape gardening to other people, John. But
you won't even get planning permission to do it, apparently.
Well, as I say, I'll leave the landscape gardening to others, but I'm absolutely clear about this. Look, trust in, you know, there are millions of people who are turned off this election. One of the reasons they're turned off this election is they think no politicians keep their promises. I always say, I said on Thursday night, I want to be the first person in British politics in a generation to under-promise and over-deliver, not over-promise and under-deliver. And that's why I've set out these pledges, and that's why I'm serious about keeping these pledges.
You're sure you didn't decide on that stone monument? I'm not quite sure we called it a monument?
A stone is perfectly adequate.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure people may not be quite sure whether you decided on the stone, because speech to the party at the party conference, you forgot to mention the deficit. So is that the idea of it, to remind you every morning when you look out of the window, that's what I've got to do when I'm Prime Minister?
No, it's to remind the British people, John. It's to remind working people in this country.
They won't be seeing it. It's in your garden.
To remind working people in this country that I am absolutely serious about changing the way this country works. And let me just tell you what we're going to do. We're going to build sound economic foundations.
You said that.
We're going to raise living standards for working families. We're going to rescue our NHS. We're going to have controls on immigration. We're going to build a future for our young people. And we're going to build homes again in our country. Those are our pledges. Those are incredibly important pledges for the working people of this country. It goes to the big choice, the clash of visions in this election, John. Look, you know, you want to go in the post-election commentary. In these next few days, this is a once-in-a-generation election for the British people. About who Britain is run for. Is it run for working people, or is it run for the richest and most powerful? That is the choice between me and David Cameron.
Is it going to be you, or is it going to be somebody else?
That is the choice between my party and the Conservative Party. And that is the choice I'm going to focus people on.
The question is, though, whether it will be you or whether it will be somebody else tugging at your lead. And that somebody, of course, could be the leader of the Scottish National Party.
I think I've said that's absolutely not going to happen, John. I've said to you absolutely in this interview that is not going to happen. This is about a Labour programme, a Labour budget. And, you know, frankly, I think David Cameron is a pretty desperate man. I just want to make this point. He's a desperate man because what he's reduced to is trying to set this election up as a clash of two nations. He's lost all the arguments. He's lost the argument about the economy. He's lost the argument about leadership. He's lost the argument about his broken promises on the NHS. And so this is all he's got left. It isn't a clash of two nations. It's about how you stand up for working people in England, in Scotland, in Wales, in Northern Ireland, in every part of our country.
Ed Miliband, thank you very much.